What's up, everybody? Our guest today is from the Michigan DNR. He is their Bear and Wolf Program Specialist, and his name is, drumroll please, Kevin Swanson. He is, for starters, totally not what I expected. We drove 8 hours to go sit down with this dude. Totally worth the drive. He is very, very down to earth, super, super nice, answered all of our questions, very intelligent. Just an awesome guy, and we had a great conversation, and I think you guys are going to dig on it. So, without further ado, Kevin Swanson. All right, so here we are in the DNR office here in Marquette with Kevin Swanson, the Bear and Wolf Program Specialist, right?
Yep.
So, you want to go over what it is that you do, your job, and your history and background with the DNR?
Well, sure. I am what's called a management specialist for our Bear and Wolf program. So we have a research side and a management side for each species. So there's species specialists. So I handle a lot of the bear, wolf, and cougar communications and management statewide. I work with all of the biologists in the UP and the northern lower. For example, right now we're getting into our next bear regulation cycle. So we're beginning to think about recommending quotas for the 2019-20 bear season. So last week I was downstate, met with all the biologists down there. So we have an internal debate about where we should go with the quotas. And those are not, it's not always easy to figure that out. You know, you look at habitat, you look at the size of that particular BMU. But then long story short is I will bring those recommendations eventually this winter. Now I'll bring those recommendations to the Natural Resources Commission and to our director of the DNR, and then they or the NRC will make a decision on those recommendations. So that's what I do on the management side. With wolves, there's not a lot going on right now other than, you know, a lot of debate. We just did our population estimate, our abundance estimate this last winter. We do that every other year. The number was 662. So I'm involved in that survey and then communicating that information to the public and to people like yourselves, to the press, the media. We get a lot of calls that I handle. I'm on the management side of things. I handle a lot of the cougar stuff that we see, the cougar reports that we receive, and we receive those daily from throughout the state. So the job that I'm in used to be in Lansing, and then they moved the position to the Upper Peninsula about 4 or 5 years ago, and I was lucky enough to get that job.
So needless to say, you carry a pretty important title with this particular department. You're a very important man to the state and the resources.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I was a field biologist before, and I'm a field person, a forester at heart, and I'm more of a spokesman now, and I work with our staff. I work with the tribal governments too, so mm-hmm. I'm sort of the person that's in the middle of the controversy. You got the NRC, you got our staff, which may not agree all the time, say mm-hmm. about bear quotas in a particular BMU.
Right.
And then you've got the tribes, then you've got our stakeholders, like the big groups, and I work with those groups a lot, like the Michigan Bear Hunters Association,
okay,
UP Bear Hunters, the Forest Service, and there's like 17 different organizations that are on our bear forum, and we have many that are on our wolf forum that will meet about management. So there's always conflict and debate, you know,
right.
and that's a good thing, and it's because there's so much passion.
Healthy debate over something that everybody cares so deeply about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you said you were a field biologist. So do you still spend a lot of time out in the field?
No, not like I used to, unfortunately. I rely more on my free time to be in the woods. Like I said, I was at camp this morning. I came in from camp for this interview, and
right.
I do a lot of brook trout fishing on small streams, a lot of hunting, grouse hunting with dogs, and rabbit hunting with dogs, and deer hunting. So this position that I'm in, and I hesitated to go after it initially because I was in the woods so much before, but I thought I could make a difference working more with people, working more with the decision makers like the Natural Resources Commission. I get to make presentations to them in Lansing normally. And give them the scientific data, and then they consider that and make decisions. So it's a good job, but no, I'm not in the woods like I used to be.
Right. Okay, so could you, in a real general outline, kind of map out the timeline of the UP Wolf?
Sure, I can. So back in the 80s, early 90s is when we confirmed a presence of wolves again in the Upper Peninsula. In the early 1900s, they were eliminated from the state of Michigan. You know, there was a bounty, which was a mistake, obviously, and mm-hmm. they were eradicated from the state of Michigan. You talk to a lot of old timers in the UP, though, and they say that they've always been here. There's always been a few, and I remember when I was about 12 years old or so, which would have been in the 80s, the mid 80s, we were going to my deer camp, me and my dad, and I was sure that we saw a wolf at that time when they were supposed to be gone. It was just a quick glimpse.
Right.
But the main story there is they came back on their own through all that persecution. There was still a core population in Minnesota. And then in 1973, that's the year that the Endangered Species Act was incepted, which is a great act, and it protected wolves. So from that core population in Minnesota, you have dispersers. You know, their biology as wolves dictate that they disperse. Very mm-hmm. few wolves in a pack will obtain a breeding position within that pack, so they disperse, both males and females, to try to set up their own territories, to set up their own packs, or even to be included in a different pack. So you've got these huge dispersal routes where they can go hundreds of miles. Sorry about that. My phone's ringing. So they came from Minnesota through Wisconsin into the Upper Peninsula, and then that became evident in the early 1990s. And then since that time, and I can send you a graph of our population estimate, and I just mentioned that we did that this last winter, mm-hmm. the numbers have gone up exponentially since then. So we went from zero to between 600 and 700 animals today. So they are still protected as an endangered species, which we adamantly disagree with. We support delisting of gray wolves in the Great Lakes states. They are not an endangered species anymore. Mm-hmm. We are privileged to have them again here. We wouldn't make the same mistakes of the past, and we're hoping that we'll have the DNR, I mean, we're hoping that we would have the ability to manage them again someday.
Yeah, we definitely want to get into that.
Okay. That's a hell of a comeback story. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is.
Now, like people down by us, below the bridge, like we were talking earlier off mic, you know, it's almost like everybody's got their conspiracy theories about the DNR releasing wolves, releasing coyotes out of green vans, you know what I mean, stuff like that. And a lot of people think the UP wolf was a reintroduction, but there was an attempt, right? There was an attempt that didn't work.
There was an attempt to translocate them back in, I think it was 1975. There were four wolves that were released in the Huron Mountains, which is not far from here, straight north, northern Marquette County, northern Baraga County. There were four animals released. That was a joint effort between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Michigan DNR, Northern Michigan University, and collars were put on those wolves, and all four wolves died. Two were shot and killed. One was trapped and then shot and killed, and the fourth was killed by a vehicle. So there was that one attempt, but that was not successful, obviously, and then they began to come back on their own. But there's still, I would say, probably half or more of the UP residents that believe we brought them back, that the DNR or the feds brought them back. Even the guys, you know, my deer camp is south of Ishpeming, and my dad, who passed away a few months ago, and others that I hunt with still believe,
right.
Even with me sitting at the table explaining it didn't happen, they don't believe me. They still believe that wolves were brought in by the DNR, which is not true.
Unlike my dad's argument is, well, that's great that all these wolves decided to stop at the border so they can put a collar on them. But they were probably collared from Minnesota or Wisconsin, right? Did they?
Some would have been, yeah. Yeah. Some would have been that came back. And we only have, on average, between, say, 30 and 40 GPS collars. Our researchers have moved from VHF to GPS now. So we only have 30 or 40 wolves in the UP right now that have collars on them. So we've got biologists like Brian Roll in this office and Christy Sitar in Newberry and others that trap wolves during the summer. It's done now because the hound season has begun, the training season. So prior to that, they trap as many as they can, and which is not easy to do. And they place GPS collars so we can monitor them. And that's more reason. The reason we do that, of course, is to support delisting and to support the fact that we can manage them based on many different data sets that we have.
Right. Before we dive into the ESA, Can you describe how the return of the wolf affected the deer population in the UP?
Yeah, well, I don't think that's clearly known, but when the wolves first arrived in the early 90s, we had the highest number of deer at that time. Everybody will tell you about the early 90s in the UP and the late 80s, how great the deer hunting was. Mm-hmm. And that was mainly because of the paper industry in the Upper Peninsula and logging, right? So when you, habitat, every decision and every reason is explained by habitat and how you manipulate that habitat. So when we had these paper mills come to the Upper Peninsula, all of a sudden, you know, the trees like behind us here, there was a value to those trees and they were utilized for paper. And today we've got a very robust forest products industry in the Upper Peninsula that's very, very important. So, you know, we've got aspen, hard maple, soft maple, many different tree species that are used for either bolt wood. We've got a sawmill here in Gwynn called Potlatch that for structural lumber, and then several paper mills. And then we've got logs that go elsewhere, even overseas, veneer logs. So because of that demand, that, you know, that introduced forestry at a much higher, to a much greater extent, which manipulated habitat. When you look at the, you know, the habitat requisites for deer, they like young growth openings, right? That's where the food is. So right. That's what caused deer numbers to explode in the Upper Peninsula, was that habitat, was that clear cutting in that habitat. So then you bring wolves into the picture, and over time, wolf numbers build, and they continue to build. They seem to be stabilizing now. But just to try to answer your question, if you look at 2 years ago in 2016, when we did our survey, we had between 600 and 700 wolves in the Upper Peninsula at that time. And our deer numbers were at the lowest that we've seen in decades. If you look at buck kill per square mile or many of our other indicators that we use to assess deer numbers in the UP, the deer hunting was really bad throughout the UP at that time. But I was a field biologist at that time, and we had had three back-to-back very severe winters prior to that that sent deer numbers down. Now, there's no doubt wolves prey on deer. They prey on a lot of deer. Mm-hmm. But the winters are the primary driver. And just to explain that further, you know, we had in 2016 the lowest number of deer we've seen in decades. And now, 2 years later, they rebounded very, very quickly because we have had three mild winters in a row now. And every UP winter is severe. I mean, we lose deer, but, you know, based on snowpack and snow depth, we had three mild winters, so deer numbers have come back despite the fact that we've got a very robust population of wolves. So I'm not saying wolves don't have an impact, but winters are the main driver. We have a study going on right now that you guys should look into. It's called the UP Predator Prey Study. Dean Beyer, our research scientist, heads that up along with Jerry Ballant and other researchers. And they've got collars on fawns and adult deer, and they're trying to assess exactly what the tolls are that are imposed on deer by the winter and by the whole suite of predators. And when you talk about predators, you don't want to just talk about wolves, because right, you've got black bear that take a few fawns every year. You've mm-hmm. got bobcat, which are probably the most proficient killer of deer, but they're very low in numbers, right?
Right. Wow.
And then you've got coyotes, and you've got a few other predators too. So, you know, the research shows that wolves kill anywhere between 15 and 50 deer per year per wolf. That's what the research shows. There's many different.
Wow.
There's a lot of literature on that. Then you look at bear. So right now, if we've got, let's just round it up to 700 wolves. Say if we got 700 wolves right now, and they're each killing 30 deer a year, let's say, which is somewhere between that 5 and 50, you know. Mm-hmm. So let's use 30. That'd be 21,000 deer that are
Holy
killed
cow.
By wolves. But then you got bear. You know, we only have 700 wolves. We've got about 10,000 or 11,000 bear in the Upper Peninsula, adult bear. So let's say you got 10,000 bear. Each bear consumes two or three fawns, and we don't know what that number is. The Predator Prey Survey will help, but there's literature from other states that suggest two to three. And there's been some research done in Michigan on that too. But say we got 10,000 bear, they're each taking, let's say, three. There's 30,000 fawns right there
Wow.
a year that are consumed. But when you look at the deer numbers in the UP, you know, the main driver are those winters. We, mm-hmm. you know, we can handle the predators. We want to be able to manage the predators. Coyotes, you know, we haven't even mentioned coyotes. They take a lot of deer, especially in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. I used to manage deer yards a lot, and it was amazing how easily they can kill deer when they are so constricted because of deep snowfall.
Right.
You might have a couple hundred deer in just a few acres of land feeding on cedar tops or mm-hmm. hardwood tops during a winter harvest. That's what they survive on in most parts of the UP. And then you got wolves and bobcat and coyotes that come in, and that's all they got to do is run them off that trail network or ambush them,
right.
and they can kill those deer pretty easily. So,
yeah, the reason I ask is because I mentioned we used to hunt in the town of Berglund on the western end of the state.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, when I was a kid, late 90s, my brother and my dad would be up there hunting when I, you know, in November, and they would always come back with a trailer full of deer every year, you know, a little scuzzy deer or whatever. But, and then the wolves started getting more prevalent, and then there was no deer. You know, they were coming back with empty trailers. And yeah. then when I started going up, I saw a steady decline, and, you know, just people weren't going up to camp.
Yeah.
The deer weren't there, you
right.
know. But I will say, our last 2 years there, the guy that owned the cabin shot two nice bucks, and my dad shot a nice buck.
Yeah.
Nice big 8-point. So it was almost like the wolves kind of cleaned up all the scuzzy genetics up there. You know, nature kind of took its course.
Picked off all the weak ones and all the small ones, and left all the better deer to get bigger and reproduce and make more viable offspring.
Right. So you say with the two milder winters we've had, this should be a pretty decent deer season up
Oh
here.
Yeah, we got 7 bucks at my deer camp last year. It was one of the best seasons that we've had, but there were years where it was very slim. But you look back now, you mentioned the 90s when you used to go up, the early 90s, there were a ton of deer. But then we had the winter of 95-96. And then the winter of 96-97, which were two of the worst winters we've had, and that cut our deer population in half pretty much. And I remember those winters, they were absolutely terrible. So I'm not dismissing wolves as a predator. I'm just trying to explain
right.
the broader picture.
Right, right. Yeah.
Wolves definitely kill a lot of deer, there's no question, but so do bears, so do coyotes. And bobcat, we don't have a lot of bobcat, but bobcat, if you compare one bobcat to one wolf or to one coyote, and that one bobcat kills more deer than that one wolf and one coyote, but there's just
really?
Far fewer of them. They're a very, very effective predator. Yeah, and bobcat up here can get to be 40 plus pounds.
Holy
you know, there.
Cow.
That was my next question, how powerful. I've never seen one in the wild, so
yeah
they're starting to make an appearance down where we're at though.
I hear that
Indiana working north, and then
sure
I got sure. a few buddies that said they've seen them in their yard out taking a piss, you know.
Oh yeah,
no pictures, but
right.
All right, so the ESA, you want to kind of talk about that, what the Endangered Species Act is?
Yeah, the Endangered Species Act, and I don't know all of the intricacies of the act, but it's one of the best statutes in the country. I think it's responsible. If we didn't have the ESA, we wouldn't have bald eagles flying around Marquette right now. You see them just about every day now out on the Dead River where one of our camps is. We've got eagles, and so it's a common appearance. You have loons that have made somewhat of a comeback, and many other species that have been saved because of the ESA, and that includes wolves. But presently, there is no reason, biologically speaking, and I'm talking biology only, that wolves should be on the endangered species list. You know, they've been taken off now in Wyoming. There's been appeals. You know, they were removed from the list and then put back on the list, then removed. It's gone back and forth mm-hmm. so many times. But the facts are these. We have surpassed state and federal recovery goals for gray wolves for the last 15 years now. The federal criteria was 100 wolves for us and for the Great Lakes states. The state goal was 200. We wanted to double that, so it was 200 for Michigan. We're up near 700 now. So there, biologically, you think about that, there's no reason. But there's a lot of organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, Center for Biological Diversity, mm-hmm. Natural Resources Defense Council, and the list goes on and on and on of these big organizations that have a lot of money and a lot of donors that oppose delisting of wolves because of what has happened to them in the past, and because they believe wolves should be restored everywhere, even where it's not possible to restore them because of human involvement or people living in those areas.
Right. So I imagine it's easy for people that aren't dealing with the wolves on a daily basis to, you know, you can put them on a calendar. You know what I mean? They're charismatic. They're beautiful animals. But if you're not dealing with them, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, they're cute and cuddly, and you know everybody just wants to pet one because they look like a dog that you just would love to have around. But if you have a farm that has sheep and you have to deal with wolves taking your sheep or chickens or any of that stuff, you know, it's a different ball game then.
Oh, absolutely.
You said people like to see the wolves in pictures and in calendars and stuff, but until they actually have to deal with them running through their backyard, taking their livestock or other threats to their well-being, you know, it's a different...
Yeah, they're a very iconic species, and mm-hmm. like I said, we are privileged to have them back. We are honored that they're back in Michigan.
Right.
I don't think you could find a biologist that says we shouldn't have wolves in the UP. Right. We're glad that they're here, but there's another side of that. Then you've got some people, some UP residents and from other places that don't want any wolves at all. Mm-hmm. They think we should kill all of them, and that's the wrong way to go, too. We need to find a balance where we can manage them appropriately based on, you know, we've got these wonderful scientists that collect all this data. Mm-hmm. We've got all these great sportsmen's groups that we consult with that know trappers that are out there all the time. They know what's going on. We could very easily manage them sustainably. And to me, that would serve to protect them more than the present status right now. Because you look at the collared mortality right now on wolves. As I said before, we've got usually between 30 and 40, 30 and 50 wolves throughout the whole UP with collars. So our researchers, Aaron Largent here in Marquette, Dean Beyer, Brian Roll, and many others, look at that non-harvest mortality and human-caused mortality. So you got vehicle strikes, mm-hmm. you've got poaching. That's the biggest one. So of that mortality, about 40% is poaching.
Wow. Now, really?
My point is that poaching would not continue at those rates if wolves were delisted.
Right.
There's a lot of animosity there on behalf of UP hunters because they've been flopping back and forth, and everyone knows that they are not an endangered species anymore. But because they're listed as such, that causes a lot of problems. So in my view, they would be better protected as an unlisted species because then they become an asset to the state of Michigan.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
They are an asset to us. They're an asset to hunters.
Right.
You know, and things would be much better, I believe, if that happened.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
You definitely have more of a resurgence of people wanting to pay to actually go hunt them, and that would send money towards the state and go a long ways towards protecting them. That's the benefit of buying a license, is that what we've talked about before, that money recirculates in the system.
Yeah.
You know, you pay for a tag and that money goes towards protecting the animal that you're trying to hunt.
You know,
it's all in the name of conservation.
Everything needs to be managed. You know, I mean, tip your hat to us, really. I mean, everybody, we brought back the wolf. I mean, we humans mm-hmm. did our best to wipe them off the face of the earth, and then we owed it to them to bring them back. We did. They're here. Now it's time to manage them.
Right.
You know, so Where are all these groups getting their money? Like you say, Humane Society. So are those like all those commercials you see, donate $5 for the sick and dying dog, and then that money really goes into fighting you guys?
You know, I don't know. That's one of the organizations, Humane Society of the United States, and there's many others. Where mm-hmm. they get their money, I don't get involved in any of that. And I'm sure that, you know, I have arguments or debates. Like with my daughter, I was at camp last night, my oldest daughter, she, for some reason, does not think we should manage wolves. She's in favor of them being listed as an endangered species. But once I sat down and explained to her, and I've talked with her about this before, about management and about sportsmen and women and how we try to manage the resource properly and mm-hmm. not over-manage, not over-harvest, then she understood. But I think a lot of people just don't know that. They're not bad people. They just don't understand the biology of wolves and the fact that really wolves are quite prolific. Mm-hmm. I mean, any dog species, look at coyotes, they are prolific animals. They just need to manage wolves with a lot of caution, and that's what we would do. We would be very cautious in their management, and they would be better served in that capacity. So I don't know where these groups get their money from. There's probably a lot of movie stars and very wealthy right. people that think about how, you know, the existence value of wolves is very important. And what I mean by that is a person that sits in Marquette that is not a hunter that lives in one of these condos down here that you pay $500,000 for. They may not be a hunter or fisherman, but they sure love to look at Lake Superior. Mm-hmm. They are very much in favor of sustainable management, mm-hmm. and they think about wolves in the UP. They may never, ever see one. They may see tracks once in a while if they're out in the woods, but it's that existence value. It's to them knowing that wolves are out there that mm-hmm. is so important, because truthfully, I mean, the UP is a wilder place with gray wolves here than, right. than without them, no question.
Yeah, I mean, I like having them on the landscape.
Yeah.
You know, like I said before, I think it's really cool that we brought them back. I mean, that's awesome.
They definitely fill a particular spot in the food chain, and the environment, the whole ecosystem with them in it operates, I think, in a more efficient way. It makes everybody happier. It makes everything just a better place to be when you can add more biodiversity to the soup, you know?
Right.
Yeah. So. Yep.
Now, does the state pay any kind of compensation when there's any sort of like wolf dog conflicts, like with houndsmen running black bears? Like, do they pay for anything?
We do not. No, not with houndsmen in Wisconsin. They do livestock that in Michigan, they are compensated for any sort of livestock loss by coyotes and wolves.
Now, so, is that something that you would have to go down there and investigate? Or
our field biologists do that. And actually, Brian Roll, who's in the Marquette office here, he's like our lead person on depredations in the Upper Peninsula. And we've only had... I don't think we've had any livestock depredations this year. I'd have to check, but I don't recall having any yet. I know we've had 3 dog depredations that we just confirmed last week, but all 3 dogs survived. Those are hounds that were attacked by wolves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we go back to, I talked about dispersal and territory size. Wolves have a very large territory. It can be hundreds of square miles. Wow. They're a very, very territorial animal. Mm-hmm. So coyotes, if they see coyotes, we talked about interbreeding, they would much rather kill a coyote than breed with a coyote. Right. That's what they're going to do, because that's a threat to their food source. So in the UP, when you have hounds and the training season just started in early July, July 7th, I think it's July 7th, but the houndsmen are out training now for black bear. So imagine being out in the middle of the woods in a big swamp, a large swamp complex, and you're hearing these hounds, and you can hear them very far off. The hounds are very far from the hunter. They've got GPS collars on these hounds. When I hunt with beagles for rabbits, usually you can hear them.
Right.
You don't need a GPS collar because right. the rabbits make tighter circles. But mm-hmm. bears have a very large home range. So those bears can run 20, 30 miles, and those dogs are going to be right behind them. A pack of wolves will hear those dogs howling. And what is a howl? That's communication.
Right.
That's a territorial threat. That's how wolves perceive it. So they will quickly move in, and if they're in that area, and kill those dogs and tear them to shreds. And right. I've seen that before. It's not a pretty sight, but that's part of the game, right? If I'm gonna be a bear hunter with hounds, or even we hunt with beagles a lot at my camp in the winter, that's always on our minds because we see wolf tracks in the area, and mm-hmm. you know. That's part of your risk. You have to minimize the risk by trying to go to places where you don't think there are wolves. But again, wolves have such a large territory. They might not be here today, but 2 weeks from now, I might be hunting there again, and you might have a pack move that through that area just checking out their territory.
Right.
And that's where you could run into a conflict. So we've had 3 of those so far, but that's... Normally, we have far fewer than they do in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has a lot more. They're up to, I think, 10 or 11 now, hounds that have been injured or killed by wolves. And that's a whole nother debate about early baiting. You know, they can start baiting for bear right away in the spring in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I have been opposing, or we, the DNR, have been opposing that here in Michigan, and we're being pushed to start baiting earlier. And that's just a bad idea, because you start baiting bears earlier, and you know, you think about that same time when wolves are moving their pups from the den sites to those rendezvous sites, mm-hmm. they are going to territorialize those bait sites. So you bring hounds to those bait sites to run a bear off of where there's bait, and you run into more conflict. And there's research that suggests exactly that you start baiting earlier, you're going to run into more conflict with bear and hound, or with wolves and hounds, and that has proved to be true.
And like you said, that's just a consideration you have to have when you decide to do this kind of sport up here in the UP. If you are going to run dogs and you know that there are wolves out there, you try to stay prepared, you try to be diligent to avoid any conflict or confrontation, but there's always going to be an instance. You know, you can't run out in the woods 30 times and not see an animal that wants to hurt you at least one of those times. There's always going to be something somewhere that you have to pay attention to and look out for. That's just part of running dogs, probably.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's consideration. But the houndsmen, at the same time, they are very frustrated because we have no ability to manage them.
Right.
Before, we had, I can't remember the acts. It was Public Act 280 and 319, I think. But, you know, livestock owners, farmers had the ability to kill a wolf if it was in the act of attacking one of their, you know, any type of livestock.
Right.
There's many different, but cattle is the main one, obviously. And then hound owners had the ability to kill a wolf if they're in the woods with their dogs and a wolf approaches. Mm-hmm. They can kill that wolf. Well, right now we can't do that because they're listed again.
On the endangered species list.
Exactly. So the only time you can kill a wolf right now if there's an imminent threat to human life.
Okay.
So is wolves getting delisted in the near future possible? I mean, where are they at right now?
Well, it is possible. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is making another attempt now, and a lot of people blame this on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they're really on our side. They have decided that wolves should be delisted. They have delisted them a few times, but that's a very involved public process. But with the Trump organization, or you know, with President Trump as our president right now, and Republicans leading the way, sort of, we've had more bills introduced in the federal Congress that would delist wolves and make it not subject to further judicial review.
Mm-hmm.
So those are possibilities, but I'm hoping the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service now will publish a rule, and their goal is to publish a proposed rule by the end of this fiscal year.
Really?
To delist wolves again.
Is there anything that people like us could do? Is there any kind of outreach? You know, can we make our voices heard to help get these wolves delisted? Or is it just a political process that we just have to sit and kind of wait?
No, there's ways to become active. You know, of course, I can't do any of that because I work for the DNR. But,
right.
I mean, you can contact your local congressman. You can join a group like MUCC,
mm-hmm.
like the bear hunting organizations. There's so many different great organizations.
Try to lobby for some change.
Yeah, that's how it's done. That's how it's done. It's money and mm-hmm. and politics, but I try to stay out of that as much as we can. The DNR has got to remain neutral there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if they got delisted, it would be for the Great Lakes region, which is what, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin?
Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, but they are lobbying to delist them for the entire lower 48 states too. That's a possibility. But
though,
you know, this has been proposed before, whether it happens or not is hard to say. I was really hopeful that the appeal in Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota was involved as a second party, but we appealed that ruling of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a judge that placed them back on the endangered species list.
I think I remember that. Wasn't it like 2 weeks they were off? There was like a two-week season on them. They come off the endangered species list, and almost as quickly as they came off the list, they got put right back on the list.
Yeah, and that's gone back and forth
right.
several times. But we appealed that ruling and lost. Wyoming won. Wyoming got them delisted through that same process, but the Great Lakes states were unsuccessful, and it's just a matter of argument and the approach of the attorneys that mm-hmm. for the Humane Society, it gets really complicated, but
right.
We're hoping this time it'll happen. So long story short, it's possible they will become delisted within the next year. No way to know for sure, but the Michigan DNR certainly supports that.
Keeping their fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I know I am.
Right. Now, they've confirmed wolves are in the Lower Peninsula, correct?
We have a few times. Most recently, in 2014, in Emmett County, the Lake Superior Band of Odawa Indians, they collected scat and photos of two different wolves down there. That scat was sent to Trent University in Canada, and it was confirmed that they were gray wolves. But we've not had any evidence since that time. So those two wolves could be down there. They may have bred. We get a lot of reports of wolves. We've seen some wolfy looking tracks and photos throughout the years from down there, but we have to be careful not to confirm it unless it's genetic confirmation
right.
because of we were talking before we started, I think about 2010, those canids that were thought to be wolf pups down mm-hmm. there. I think that was in Presque Isle County? I can't remember, but they turned out to be coyotes, and they had to genetically test them to prove that. They looked like wolf pups, and some of our own people, the DNR people, were involved in that, and they looked like wolf pups. They were bigger. Their dentition, they looked at their teeth, and they mm-hmm. thought they were wolf pups. They turned out to be coyotes, but genetically, there was some wolf introgression into those coyotes generations before in their pedigree. So there was some wolf.
Somewhere down the line, right. Not necessarily in those pups, there was the introduction into that gene code of this wolf.
Yeah, and we were talking about coy wolves before. Mm-hmm. There is no species known as coy wolves.
Right.
National Geographic, there's been a big buzz about that in the last couple of years, but there's no species known as a coy wolf. There has been interbreeding between wolves and coyotes, but it was long ago, and that typically took place at the edge of population expansion. And they call that like the nadir, is when the population is at its lowest level.
Mm-hmm.
When wolf numbers were at their lowest level, then it becomes a possibility that they would interbreed, because there might be one wolf for 200 square miles. That right. one wolf runs into a coyote back then, and it's possible that they would breed. But today, we have no evidence of that happening in Michigan at all. Because
right. I'm sorry, like you said, it's more common for a wolf, being a bigger dog, to want to kill the coyote for food
competition.
Competition, right. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
would it normally be like a male wolf and a female coyote, or vice versa, or just it didn't matter?
Well, it could be.
Could be
either.
It yeah. would just be survival at that time. Mother Nature would kick in to tell them that, hey, you know, instead of killing this one, maybe you would want to reproduce with it, because you don't have any buddies left and you need to start cranking up the population. So,
yep.
Do you get many domestic dog wolf conflicts?
We do. We had a report last week. Actually, I think it was in Ontonagon County, but that was not confirmed. So we have to confirm those, but it's normally hounds, normally bear hounds,
right.
Some beagles, but some domestic dogs get killed too. I think that's more prevalent in Wisconsin, just because there's more dogs that are killed in Wisconsin. But I would say it's a minor part of that number in the Upper Peninsula. It happens.
I say, has that number gone up over the years, maybe with the rising wolf population?
Actually, you know, we thought it had, and if you look at the number of depredations as the wolf population rises, it looked like it, but now in recent years, there's really not a correlation. So, you know, you throw deer numbers, and deer numbers are very volatile in the Upper Peninsula because of those winters.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw all other variables in it, it's really hard to find a trend that supports that lately. I mean, it's probably because deer numbers have come back, and you just don't see the number of depredations because there's more deer.
Mm-hmm.
Before, when the deer numbers were very low, those wolves had a harder time. You know, they got to eat. Yeah, so
they would eat the dogs. They wouldn't. It wouldn't be a territory thing if it was domestic.
They will feed on them, no question. But I think the initial kill is because it's territoriality. They hear them. They hear them.
So they're just wandering farther than normal because they're looking for food because the winter was tough, is what you're saying. And then they'd wind up in somebody's backyard and see a dog.
That's possible. Yeah. Yeah, that's possible.
Or right. just the thought that there's not as much food out there. If they heard a dog, they would more than likely go to it as a food source instead of a competition thing. You know, I know when I'm hungry, I tend to be a little more motivated than if I'm just angry or whatever, you know.
Right. Well, the reason I asked that is because there's more people in the Lower Peninsula. I mean, just there is, you know what I mean? So if the wolf population if it does start to grow down there and they're still protected, I see there being quite a few human domestic conflicts with wolves. So, I mean, do you guys have like a backup plan if they don't get delisted to try to get ahead of that? Or are you guys not worried about that right now?
No, you know, because we've not detected their presence, in the northern lower in a few years now, nothing suggests that the numbers are growing. We did have two wolves, and you know, but those wolves got there like previous wolves did, and that's through the ice bridges that connect the peninsulas.
Mm-hmm.
And we have those less often now than we once did. So you have less of that happening. But no, we would assess that if those wolves in the northern lower, if there are wolves right now there, and if they bred and had a pack, then we would get more involved in. But right now in the wolf plan, it's to naturally allow wolves to do what they're doing.
Hopefully let them spread out and continue to increase in population and deal with it.
But I think you're right. I think there would be more conflict in the lower peninsula, and because that's because there's less social tolerance. And I can speak for bears now. We have so many different nuisance complaints in black bear in the northern lower. I just met with the staff, as I said, last week, and I keep track of those numbers. I graph our nuisance complaints every year, and bear numbers have been rising in the northern lower. And with that becomes you've got a rise in nuisance complaints. You got more bluff charges on humans. We had that one attack on a human down there. We've had other reported attacks, but they're very rare. Mm-hmm. But again, that's part of being in the woods. That's a risk that you take on by being in the woods, even though it's a very, very minimal risk. You look at the bear numbers down there and how they've risen, and we've tried to adjust our quotas upward. We've doubled the number of licenses in the Baldwin BMU, not just to address the nuisance complaints. It's because it's biologically sound to do that based on the bear numbers. But I think the social tolerance is lower in the lower peninsula than it is in the upper peninsula. Someone that has a bird feeder attacked in the lower peninsula probably calls the DNR. They're more scared of bears down there because they see them less often, whereas... Mm-hmm. You know, if it's my dad at deer camp and a bear breaks into the shed, he doesn't call the DNR because it happens every year.
Get out there with a broom.
Just more social tolerance.
In general, people that live in the UP tend to be a different breed anyways. You don't normally live up here unless you enjoy living up here. I mean, like you talk about the winters being so bad. Like old people going to Florida in the winter, a lot of people don't travel to the northern UP in the winter. Right. So the people that stay up here... I think it's a different breed of person.
It's beautiful. The upper beautiful time of year right now. Yeah.
This is really a gorgeous even setting that you have here for your office. And
thank you.
Right on Lake Superior there. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Great place to raise kids too.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to get to earlier. When we were on our way up here, we noticed there was a lack of roadkill all over the road. That's all I kept talking about.
Yeah.
Down at home, it's like there's trash pandas, raccoons, like everywhere. Everywhere.
Possums, raccoons.
Once we got about an hour north of Grand Rapids, it started to thin out. We got to the UP. I think we seen one dead possum on the way up. That just blew my mind. If it's lack of traffic, or the animals are just smarter up here, but it's probably lack of traffic, huh?
Yeah. Although you look at Marquette, and there's 30 some thousand vehicles moving through parts of Marquette just about every day. I mean, you have thousands and thousands of tourists that coming up more to the UP, which really helps with our economy too. That's really important.
Absolutely.
To us. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody here has been so friendly.
Good.
The everywhere town of Marquette, even just what little bit we got to see it last night, is beautiful. I mean, it's small town, just super friendly people. Everybody here makes you feel like you want to be here.
Oh,
that's
good.
Really nice.
Well, that's nice to hear. Yeah. Lots of good people up here.
Absolutely.
Back to the wolf population though. So, now, like with the UP, you said their numbers keep going up, so they wouldn't like get to a carrying capacity in their environment and stop, or they just keep expanding and keep breeding, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's been research done there about what the biological carrying capacity is, and that word is used a lot for bears and wolves and other species. What how many bear could we grow in the Upper Peninsula if we wanted to really take advantage of that biological carrying capacity? But you also have a social carrying capacity, and those numbers are in a range, really. So no one knows. I mean, you can have the smartest man in the world, and he or she is not going to know what the biological carrying capacity of the UP is. But there's been research done that suggests anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 wolves could be held in the UP biologically, but that's going to fluctuate based on deer numbers. Deer are their primary source of prey. They prey on beaver too. But deer is the primary prey for wolves. So your prey is going to be a limiting factor always with wolves. And the geographical area of the Upper Peninsula is a limiting factor, right? Mm-hmm. Because you look at the territory size, the territory size can, it ranges between you know, a few dozen square miles to 200 square miles. I think the average in the UP is about 125 square miles per Holy pack. Hell. So when you look at the UP, we've only got 16,000 square miles of land here. Mm-hmm. So as those packs overlap, they're very territorial. So that's one of the non-human causes of mortality. Also, is intraspecific strife between wolf packs. Members of one pack will kill members of the other pack right. because of that territoriality. That happens often. So that's another limiting factor to what, you know, as to what the biological carrying capacity would be. So right now the numbers hovered between 600 and 700 animals for the last 4 or 5 years. I believe it could go up from there, but we've got very good deer numbers right now. But it seems in recent years the numbers have stabilized. When you just look at the mean points on our graphs, the numbers have begun to stabilize now. So they've been going up and up and up and up, and now they've
begun to level out a little
bit. Kind of plateau a little bit.
It's not to say it won't go up, though.
What's the average wolf group size? What would a pack be? Is that 20 wolves or is
no,
that an average?
Yep, the average pack size now is just a hair less than 5.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's about 5.
Really? Wow.
Yep. Yep, in the Upper Peninsula. If you look at Yellowstone and in the West UP, we had some packs that numbered in the high teens years ago, but that number has declined.
Okay.
So it's about 5 is the average number per pack, and we've got 139 packs now in the Upper Peninsula.
Wow.
So we had 125, and that number of packs went up to 139 during this last survey, but the average pack size went down a bit.
Okay.
Right. So you got to consider that.
So they're just spreading themselves out a little bit more. Smaller pack size with a bigger pack area.
Yeah, they have.
Basically.
It depends on the pack, but they typically have very large. And there is some tolerance between packs. There has to be. And I think the GPS data from Wisconsin and Michigan is showing that now. I think they're more tolerant than we thought, especially in the wintertime when you've got deer. You know, our deer in the entire UP are constricted to only about. What is it? It's less than 20% of the landscape in the winter because mm-hmm. we've got obligate migratory deer that need to leave areas like where my deer camp is. There's not a deer there for 3 or 4 months. They have to move, and they move long distances to get out of that snow.
Get to where the food is.
To get where the food is. And because deer are the primary prey source for wolves, those wolves have got to go down into those deer yards mm-hmm. to prey on deer, and coyotes do too. So there's tolerance there between packs because they've got to be overlapping during those winter months because that's where the deer are.
Everybody's eating at the same table. You know, you got to put up with a little diversity there once in a while just to survive.
Do you happen to know how big the average pack size is, say, like out west by any chance?
It's much larger out west.
Because of bigger prey? Like elk and moose?
Yeah, they have bigger prey. I mean, that's part of the reason, but they've got a vaster landscape as well. I mean, they've got
more prairie land, more wide open space.
They've got more wide open space, and they've got just more geographical area than like the UP. We've only got the 16,000 square miles here, and we don't, you know, the UP is largely forested landscape.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our deer numbers fluctuate, so they probably have more reliable prey bases. You know, they don't have the fluctuations in prey as we do in the Upper Peninsula. You know, you got deer numbers that are going like this, up and down, primarily based on those difficult winters. So that's part of it. But yeah, that typically the pack sizes, I don't know exactly what it is, but I know it's higher than 5.
Okay.
But in Minnesota and Wisconsin, it's close to what we're at. I know Wisconsin is as far as average pack size.
And Wisconsin and Minnesota, they have much higher wolf populations over there too, right?
Well, Minnesota certainly does. Yeah, in Wisconsin, I think their estimate is about 100 or 100 or so more animals than we have. So we're pretty close to Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we can get kind of close to wrapping this up. We're going to keep talking to Kevin here about some black bear stuff, but just kind of some, if anybody wants to throw in like some final thoughts on the wolf, I guess I'll start it off by saying I appreciate the work you do, and thank you so much for coming to sit down with us. I mean,
yeah, thank you.
On a Saturday.
Taking time out of your schedule to deal with us is we greatly appreciate it.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
But yeah, I appreciate everything the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Michigan DNR, all the fish and game agencies, and what they've done to bring the wolf back on the landscape. I hope that one day, soon, they're going to be off the endangered species list, so we can get to managing these things like we do everything else. And Michigan, the state of Michigan, has done a great job in managing everything else: turkey, elk, whitetail. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
I think the basis for delisting them based on it would benefit them as a species is a powerful argument to make, because, like you said, until it gets explained to people, they don't understand the regulation that would lead to the conservation. And that's, hopefully we can shed a little bit of light on that doing this today.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I know for me personally, I'm going to go down, tell everybody for the next couple of weeks everything I learned today about the wolf. So right. It's going to be like, word of mouth is strong.
Like we talked earlier, you know, it's like we said, down where we're at, it's almost like everybody's in conspiracy mode when it comes to the DNR. They're kicking coyotes out of green vans. They're, you know, they re-release the wolves.
They pull up in the dead of the night to a cul-de-sac and throw the door open, and here's a couple gunny sacks on the ground. Wolves are running out of them, you know, off into the trees.
They imagine it's you guys up here with a magic wand just making rules and regs, and, you know, it's not that way. There's a very structured, you know, it's checks and balances.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a lot of people doing a lot of hard work to hopefully benefit John Q. Public. You know, this is part of living in the state of Michigan's enjoying the natural resources available to us. So,
yeah, you're on the same team.
That's right.
We're on the same team.
Yep. Hopefully common sense will prevail.
Well, we're working on it.
Yeah.
It's slow progress sometimes, but it's going in the right direction now.
Good. So. Good.
Ray, you got any final thoughts?
I don't. Just here to learn.
Kevin?
Oh, that's it for me. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
We're going to take a break here, and then we're going to start talking about some black bears. So keep your ears to the ground for that one. All right. All right, everybody, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening. And like I said, we have another knockout episode with Kevin coming at you next, where we sit down and talk Michigan black bears. So definitely keep your ears to the ground for that. And hopefully Kevin, in this episode, set the record straight on some of the conspiracy theories that get thrown around in the state concerning the wolf. But you know how them old-timers are, so I guess we'll wait and see. As always, all music and artwork is done by Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com and the Root Note Podcast. All editing is done by the Kyle Palmotter. If you guys want to get a hold of us here at Racks, Fur, and Feathers, shoot us an email at racksfurandfeathers@gmail.com. Look us up on Twitter at RFF Podcast, Facebook at Racks, Fur, and Feathers. There is a group and a page. And look us up on Instagram at Racks, Fur, and Feathers Podcast. So, hope everybody's staying cool, getting your bows sighted in, and we'll talk to you soon.